The following is rated R. It contains violence, adult language, nudity, and adult content.
Good evening, everybody. It's 8:30, and welcome to the Fear the Walking Dead online viewing party. It's Sunday, the 16th of June, 2019. I'm host Casey Shapiro, and tonight's show is made possible thanks to our sponsor, NDB Media. Tonight's show may contain spoilers up through the last episode of Fear the Walking Dead and possible information from current AMC official promo materials. So welcome to Season 5, Episode 3. After tonight, there will be 5 more episodes until a mid-season finale, and Season 5 will be doing the traditional 50-50 split season, with 8 episodes running until July 21st. We don't yet know when Episode 9 will resume the season, but our best guess, counting back from the first Sunday in October, makes August 11th a likely candidate. We'll keep our listeners informed when we get confirmation of those dates. So typically, we start this show about a half hour before the new episode airs live each week, with recap from the previous episode and discussion of what is to come tonight. At 9 p.m., we'll go dark or mute and watch the new episode together, and give episode ratings from 1 to 10 and commentary during the commercial breaks. We will also give our listeners trivia on the show as well as the cast and crew, including bios, birthdays, and more. Our show is spoiler and comic free. Please don't discuss either spoilers or the comics in the chat or on the air. We prefer our discussions, reactions, and comments to be just about what we know from the show that's presented. I'm going to take a quick peek and see if we have anybody in the chat room yet. I know we've had a little misbehavior with it. And yes, Joan, one of our regulars, is here and is in the chat room and everything's working. So I'm going to give her some welcome back applause. Thanks for joining us, Joan. Very glad you could make it and that the chat room is showing you some love because we had a little problem with that last week and the last couple weeks. Okay, so. Feel free to call in with the host and talk to the host, at 914-338-0314, preferably anytime between 8:30 and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. You're welcome to call during the show. You will be screened and muted until the commercial break where we can chat on the air. If the phones are not your thing, then feel free to join us in our live chat room, which is functioning again, where you will be able to listen to the show real time, as well as download the episode after the fact. And we give the links for that on our Facebook page and my Twitter typically. So feel free to grab the links each week and hang on to those to download individual episodes. If you're unable to join us in real time this evening, you can still go to each episode link later and download the broadcast as an MP3 podcast for later listening. Click on the cloud-shaped white icon at the top right of the page. Okay, episode 3. Is called Humbug Gulch. The official AMC synopsis is, June and Dory take shelter to hide from a threat, but a misunderstanding with a desperate survivor leads to trouble. Meanwhile, Alicia and Morgan face a dangerous obstacle. So, just to let you guys know, it is common knowledge in the publicized materials for this week's promos who the stranger is. I'm going to give it a few minutes and go through the rest of my notes. If you want to know who it is, I may come back and tell you, but I'm going to give you a little bit of warning first. It's a plot device, definitely an important one. Okay, and as we typically do, we have additional synopses articles that I will read to you guys. Let me go ahead and pull the first one up and get that queued up for you guys. And got that. That up, but I wish they would stop auto-playing videos when I pull the website up. Thank you. Also, to give you a heads up, I still have that evil virus from last week, so I am a little barky. I'll try not to do that into the microphone if I have a little warning. Okay, so the first additional synopsis is from Brandon Davis at comicbook.com. It was written this morning, and Brandon says, on Sunday night, AMC will air the third episode of Fear the Walking Dead's fifth season. Leaving the reunion of Daniel Salazar and Coleman Domingo aside for now, the new episode will bring a familiar face from the Dead universe into play. Okay, Here's your warning. Go take a pee break if you don't want to know. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go pee. All right, for the rest of you, Fear the Walking Dead episode 5-3 is titled Humbug's Gulch. The official synopsis for Humbug's Gulch I just read you. The episode is directed and scripted by, we do that later, so I'm going to skip that too. All right, let's see how Joan's doing in the chat room. No comments yet. Going to continue. Okay, here it is. Last chance to pee. The new episode of Fear the Walking Dead marks the debut of, you probably already knew this, Austin Emilio as Dwight from the spinoff series. Well, no, coming on to the spinoff series from the original, having debuted the role in Walking Dead in its sixth season. The episode also marks the second time Victor Strand, actor Coleman Domingo, gets behind the camera with the series for another directorial debut. We will get into that when we do the writers and directors section. But he did comment on that in the interview with comicbook.com. So he says, I guess you know more, you do better, Domingo said in an interview with comicbook.com. I think I knew what I was getting myself into, but episode 5-3 was even more stunts and special effects and visual effects. I guess I did okay on my first time out, and we'll tell you which, we'll remind you guys what episode that was that he directed, so you'll understand the context of this. And so I think they handed me everything in the kitchen sink. So I don't know, I think I even learned even more patience. I learned how to prep even more because I think prep work is where you do the bulk of your preparation for the day of getting the shots. I think I learned I had an instinct that being sort of a graceful, quiet director was the way to go and still works for me. Pardon me a moment. Coffee break. Domingo, again, does not appear in the episode which he directs, as last time. Being an actor, however, helps Domingo understand the process when working with his cast members as well. I think you got to be the quiet in the storm, Domingo explains. You can't be rattled when you have a huge team depending on you. Luckily, he's working with a cast that embraces him and acts as a supportive family unit, something the actor-turned-director noted when talking about his episode in season 4. Okay. The rest is just notes, not of any particular importance. No commentary back from Joan yet, so we will continue. And let me pull up the next article for you guys. And this one is from undeadwalking.com. Let me pull it up. Paste. Oop. There we go. Oops, I did something funny. Let me try it again. Bad pasting. Okay, so this one is from FanSided, hosted by undeadwalking.com, Sarah Beth Pollock, who is a frequent writer for them about this show. And Sarah Beth says, after last week's episode of Fear the Walking Dead, it's clear that someone out there is trying to send a message to the group, but whether they're trying to hide something or if they simply want to be left alone is unclear. The mystery of the nuclear walkers has been resolved, but there's every reason to believe that we haven't seen the last of Grace after she explained that a nuclear reactor melted down and she's been tracking down her friends who were stuck in the hot zone. Now that the group knows to steer clear of the nuclear walkers, it's time to focus on the people who keep hanging walkers' heads as decorations. Annie was the first, the little girl, to tell the group that they landed in the middle of trouble, and trouble it has been. However, it looks like we haven't even scratched the surface of what she was talking about. The radiation signs are indeed a deterrent, but there's something much more sinister at play. This week's episode continues the action from last week as the group continues to search for Al, while searching for clues about where they are. And synopsis, which we've already read, and other information, which is not that crucial. It's stuff we already know. Okay. Let's go to the next one. Not sure if Joan was taking a pee break, so she missed it. Joan, you know this spoiler, so I'm sure you're not in the ladies' room. Let's go ahead and go to the next synopsis. And this one is from CBR.com. I forgot what that stood for. Let me double check on that real quick. What is CBR.com? Hello, what are you? Home, contact us. The Volmet property is Canadian. Seriously, guys, tell me who you are. This is super annoying. Comment these videos. Community more. I really don't know what that stands for. Joan, if you happen to know or if you have time to go chase it down, let me know. Because this is super irritating that I don't know this source. This is Fear the Walking Dead exclusive. Alicia and Luciana find trouble in Humbug Gulch. This is by Alexandra August and was written on June 14th. This week's Fear the Walking Dead, directed by series star Coleman Domingo, features a pretty run-of-the-mill problem, flat tires. Though flat tires caused by a nail strip during a zombie apocalypse tend to be more unnerving than the ones we'd simply call AAA for. I find that a weird reference coming from a Canadian source, but okay. Last week's The Hurt That Will Happen saw Morgan and Alicia meet Grace, the former manager of a nuclear power plant that suffered a catastrophic meltdown in the aftermath of the apocalypse. The radiation in the surrounding area gave them more immediate motivation to find the kids who appeared and then disappeared in the premiere. In the clip below, which I'm obviously not going to show you since we're talking, Luciana and Alicia have been separated from Morgan, but that isn't stopping their mission to find the missing children. Things start out benignly enough with Alicia and Luciana cruising through the Texas country as Morgan warns them off the road because no one has any idea what they're getting into. We can cautiously assume that he's talking about the nuclear signposts working in concert with the DIY walker fences that the crews found scattered throughout the region they've crash-landed in. But just as Alicia's waxing poetic about how she can't leave the poor, defenseless kids in the dust, she and Luciana bust a flat and run off the road. When Alicia goes to investigate, she discovers a nail strip someone very obviously planted in the road. But was it in an attempt to keep people out or entrap them? Alicia is clearly continuing to struggle with her desire to take out her rage on the world, but also live up to her mother's legacy and try to do some good in the world along with Morgan. Unfortunately, she needs to be alive to do that, and Morgan knows reckless behavior when he sees it, mostly because there's a misplaced pronoun in there. Sorry, I'm ignoring that. Because that kind of risk used to define him, that he should have been edited out. So will Alicia follow her instincts right into an early grave along with the rest of her family? Or did she mean what she said in this clip when she committed to finding the lost kids and nothing else? And that is the end of that one. I'm going to double check. Joan, are you with us? Just kind of checking. Haven't really seen you commenting on anything yet, so I don't know if you're prepping. We have 17 minutes till we go live. There are two more synopsis articles. They're all really short, so I'm just plowing right through these little different comments and different takes from each one. This is from Newsweek. It was written yesterday morning and is from Christopher Grew, G-R-O-U-X, as Fear the Walking Dead, Season 5, Episode 3. It says spoilers, but it's not properly spoilers how we mean it. It's about Dwight, which we already just said has been spoiled by AMC itself. Okay. Fear the Walking Dead continues with episode 3 on Sunday, and it's a big one for fans of the original series. Dwight is about to make his big spinoff debut, and spoilers from the Spoiling Dead fan forums reveal the first details of the plot. If I see anything that's not really been put out there by AMC, I will carve that stuff out. Before getting to the juicy tidbits, though, the group encounters several walker roadblocks on the open road. Again, in the promo, so we know this. John and June visit Humbug Gulch, which is essentially a Wild West town where they loot some guns and ammo from a cabinet. Alicia and Luciana, on the other hand, make contact with teens Annie, Dylan, and Max on a walkie. Mild spoiler, but it's in one of the video teasers. Annie tells them not to come looking for them, but the two women ignore the request. And I'm sure that's a whole big, you know, don't come looking for me, of course, automatically means they're going to. Dwight makes his debut later in the episode when June and John get stuck in a dust storm. Photographs are in the teasers at their location. Let me see. I'm going to leave that next chunk out. And so we will deal with that when it happens. I think this is too spoilery, so we're skipping all that stuff. Some things I have theorized about Dwight's upcoming plot turn out to be true. If you remember what that is, super. And if you don't, well, then I just haven't spoiled it for you. So Dwight reveals his plot line. I was right. The rest of it I'm going to ditch as too spoilery. Oh, okay. Joan has made some comments. She was having minor technical difficulties. She's refreshed. Everything's good. Looking forward to finding out what Dwight has been through getting from Virginia to Texas. If you remember anything I've been commenting on about that, if you remember it, I was right. And I'm not going to tell you what it was, but I'm going to tell you that. Let's go to the last one, which is from bleedingcool.com, another source that we hadn't been using but have been more recently. And this was written yesterday. It says, Fear the Walking Dead opening minutes, Humbug's Gulch. It's Humbug, yeah. Humbug Gulch. I don't think it's possessive. Yeah, Humbug Gulch. Okay, Bleeding Cool, you screwed up. This town ain't big enough for both of you and walkers. This was posted by Ray Fluke yesterday. Ray, check your episodes next time you write about the show. Okay, coming off a solid yet concerning season premiere, AMC's Fear the Walking Dead, The Hurt That Will Happen, gave us a sense of forward motion and a build toward that something that was discussed during the show's preseason. While there wasn't a Dwight, but it looks like that's changing this week, citing this week, and Althea is still MIA, we were introduced to Atomic Walkers, our wording, obviously. Unfortunately, so was Morgan, who was informed by nuclear expert and probably Grace that he needed to say goodbye to his walking fighting stick. We thought Luciano was getting better, but now we're not so sure, just like we're not sure wind knocked out the radio. Strand and Daniel had a painfully awkward reunion, and a fruitless one for Strand. I don't think it's going to be fruitless, but I think Daniel's going to do how Daniel often does and do it in his own sweet time. While Alicia is dealing with her building guilt and anger over her feeling she's not keeping everyone safe. Which leads us in to this week's episode, Humbug Gulch. And at this time, instead of a preview, you're getting opening minutes from the episode, as you can see from the following promo, which you guys can't see because it's a video, whatever. That's really about the end of that. So I'm going to move on to the next section. We've got about 12 minutes, and I have a lot of stuff to cover. So double-checking in the chat room. Jonas said, with a name like Humbug Gulch, of course, it's a dust storm. Luckily, you don't have bigger problems. I do have some commentary on the name of the place when we get to trivia. So, Writers and Directors Time, written by Ashley Cardiff and directed by Coleman Domingo. So, Ashley Cardiff is a writer from Northern California. As a strange child, she wrote a 600-page quest fantasy novel about a dragon planet, built an Ewok to scale out of chicken wire, and taught herself to play an entire level of Sonic the Hedgehog 3 blindfolded, using the music as cues. People often say, well, that makes sense, when she tells them she homeschooled. After a few glorious years working at an indie comic book store, Cardiff attended St. John's College, where she added translating ancient Greek to an already dubious skill set. Well, she says in her bio it's dubious. I'm not really surprised. Upon obtaining a complicated-sounding degree that amounts to reads books and talks about them, she worked at New York's beloved science fiction and fantasy imprint Tor/Forge before moving to Los Angeles to become a screenwriter. In a 2013 Rumpus interview, they mentioned her first book, Night Terrors, Sex, Dating, Puberty, and Other Alarming Things, a collection of essays and ruminations on sex and sexuality, was just published. From 2014 to 2018, she wrote for Marty Noxon of Buffy fame's created series Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce as story editor for 8 episodes, with written by credit for 2 episodes and 1 episode with both credits for a total of 11. She's currently delighted to spend her days talking about zombies and cowboys at Fear the Walking Dead. In IMDb, she's listed as an executive story editor for 10 episodes of Season 5 of Fear, 1 through 10 and 16, minus episodes 11 through 15. Tonight is her first time writing an actual episode within the Walking Dead franchise. Coleman Domingo is a very familiar name for fans of Fear the Walking Dead. He is actively part of the cast since the end of season one, but has branched out and also directed season four, episode 12, Week, as well as tonight's episode, which is his second time directing within the franchise. Coleman Jackson Domingo was born in Philadelphia and attended Temple University, where he majored in journalism. Soon thereafter, he moved to San Francisco, where he started acting mainly in theater productions. He has had a prolific career so far in stage acting, musical theater, and dance. Just as a stage actor, he received 8 awards of various types from 1997 through 2017. He was additionally nominated for another 14 awards starting in 2010 with his solo biographical show, A Boy and His Soul, presented off-Broadway at the Vineyard Theater. He also has multiple stage writer credits. As a stage actor, he has over 50 credits from 1995 to 2014. As a film actor, he has over 30 credits between 1995 to 2018. Over 20 credits for television, including his role as Victor Strand in Fear, since season one. As director, he has 12 credits for stage shows from 1998 to 2017, and a 13th for television, with directing the previous thing that he directed for Fear. And so I guess, I don't know how that's going to work out with his credits. They'll have to catch up, so I assume he'll have a similar one for directing tonight's episode as well. He was ordained a minister by the non-denominational Universal Life Church. On the July 9th, 2017 episode of Talking Dead, Coleman revealed that he had spent time as an aerial performer in a traveling circus. According to Domingo, on the 9-17-17 of Fear, he stated that he went to high school with Will Smith. I double check in the chat room. Nothing further to add, and we've got 7 minutes, so let's see what else we can get through. Trivia about tonight's episode. It will be the 56th episode of the series overall. First appearance in the Fear continuity of Dwight. This episode marks Alicia Debnam Carey's 50th appearance on the show. Humbug Gulch is the rodeo club John Dory used to work at. That's where the name comes from. Starting with this episode, Austin Emilio has been added to the opening credits. Trivia from last episode that wasn't already covered. First and last appearance of Michael Sherwood. First and last appearance of Bert Dealey. First and last appearance of Camp Cackleberry. It's revealed that a reactor meltdown the previous year has contaminated the area where Morgan's group crashed with radiation. As a result, a lot of walkers are contaminated as well and are dangerous to get close to. Grace was the one to put up all the radiation warning signs, but she was not responsible for the walker blockade encountered in here to help. Due to his encounter with a contaminated walker, Morgan is forced to ditch his staff permanently. You know, it's very strange. I could have sworn that Morgan's original staff had been destroyed before, but I really can't remember. And Joan, if you happen to feel like chasing that up, that's super, but it's a lot to fool around with. Grace warns Morgan that he can't ever get the staff clean as the wood is porous and would have soaked up the radiation to which it was exposed. It's confirmed that the herd faced in Here to Help was not radioactive, meaning that Morgan's group was not contaminated during their fight with it. Due to the plant meltdown, there are over 60 walkers that became radioactive. Grace states that there are currently 63 left after all the ones she has put down, but it is not stated how many there were to begin with, just over 60. Around half of the walkers were discovered taken out at Camp Cackleberry as well. Hold on a second. Yeah, okay, it is Cackleberry, not Crackleberry. Though the names of the radioactive walkers are not given during the episode, they are visible on their dosimeters when Grace looks at them, Michael Sherwood and Bert Dealey. That's how we know their names. There were no goofs, edit, errors, bloopers listed for the previous episode, and we have 6 minutes, so I'll try to get through what I can. Cast birthdays this week, Ryan Douglas Hurst, who played Beta in The Whisperers on June 19th, and he was from Santa Monica, and David Mark Morrissey, who played the governor, a.k.a. Philip Blake. His birthday is June 21st, and he is from Liverpool, England. So let's give them some happy birthday applause. Yeah. Thank you guys for your work on the show and many happy returns on your respective birthdays. Unaccounted for characters, we're skipping a reminder from last week that according to comicbook.com, Talking Dead will not be following this show up to the mid-season. So we're not going to cover any of that. And I'm not sure why. I don't have any news why this is going on. But if you want more information, let me know and I can cover it. There is an article, but it doesn't tell me why. I do have discussion links, one of which I didn't get to last week, and I do want to pull this one up. And this was Bobby Reed, and the closing credits mentioned a dedication to him. And I wanted to give this some attention. Last week, we really just didn't have time. So this is from comicbook.com by Brandon Davis. And the special dedication said in memory of Bobby Reed, but a lot of people were like, who is that? Okay, so on the heels of a shocking conclusion of the episode, Reed was a part of the Fear of the Walking Dead's crew in the most recent season. Reed, known professionally as Robert Reed, worked as a key grip on Fear's third season. More specifically, Reed worked on the episodes Mile Marker 84, I Lose People, and I Lose Myself, the season 5 finale. No, that's not the season 5 finale. Stupid. Bad Brandon. Season 4 finale. He's also worked on The Green Hornet, Bird Box, Terminator 3, and the upcoming TV series LA's Finest. Reed's filmmaking resume extends back to 95 with nearly 60 titles to his credit. He passed away prior to Fear the Walking Dead's premiere date. AMC has previously dedicated episodes to cast, crew members, and fans who have passed away. Most recently, before now, an episode of The Walking Dead was dedicated to Herschel Green actor Scott Wilson following his passing. The actor reprised his role in Season 9 of The Walking Dead, having filmed his part prior to his passing. Fear the Walking Dead episode 501 was entitled Here to Help. Official synopsis not relevant, who wrote it is not relevant, and that's all we really need to say about that. Double check with Joan. No further comments. We've got about 3 minutes left, so let me see what I've got. Okay, so we've done the Bobby Reed thing. They're explaining the connection with Dwight. I may squeeze that one in tonight since it's relevant to tonight. Okay, next week's lineup is going to be Skidmark, as in the cat. So we know Daniel and Strand are going to get back together. Writer is Samir Mehta, and the director is Tara Nicole Weir. And we'll get back more into that later. And we've got 2 minutes left. I'm going to go ahead and move the Bobby Reed article off since we have now talked about that, so I don't repeat it. And pardon me while I do a little baby housekeeping. Pardon me. We are, Daniel's about ready to get Strand out of there, so got 1 minute left until we go live. I'm going to get this stuff out of the way for you guys. Okay, so we'll have time to talk about the storyline stuff during the commercials. And I did have that article, What Fear the Walking Dead Got Right and Wrong, that was actually written at the end of Season 4, and we didn't finish that article. So what I may do is pull that one up first to read during the commercials, and we will pick back up where I didn't complete it last time during one of the first breaks. All right, so I've got that up for you all. And all right, Joan, we're just about ready to go. I'm just stalling a couple minutes. So Strand's walking off into the distance. Da 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 da. Now cue some exciting music. I'll let a little music run, and then we're probably going to go ahead and go dark for the live stuff in just a moment. Okay, here we go. All right, going dark. See you at break number one. Hey guys, it's 9:06, first commercial break. Let's see. So during this little first chunk, Joan was looking stuff up because she's amazing like that. And I had been fussing that they were making way too much damn drama about Morgan having to give up his stick, because I was pretty certain that there were plots surrounding the original Walking Dead, because that's how we got into the whole storyline about the Eastman guy that gave it to him, or, you know, taught him to use it. And he lost it or broke it, had to get a new one. I know he used a broom handle at one point. That's not his damn original stick. So I have no idea why he would be so damn attached to it. And like, oh, you have to give it up because it has radiation. Blah, blah, blah. It's a random stick. And I don't know what this is. I think somebody in continuity is not paying attention. Joan started off with a 5.5. I'm the 5.75. Joan went and looked it up, and I am correct. It's not his first original stick, and it's not the one that Easton gave him. He sharpened that one after Benjamin died, and he had to kill Richard back in the kingdom, pushing him off the cliff a little again. Yeah, that's what Joan says. So I want to give Joan thank you for looking that up so quickly, and I feel glad. Okay, so my memory isn't that bad, and I'm going to wander over to the article that I was reading you guys last week, which was what Fear the Walking Dead got right and what it got really, really wrong. And this was from 11 months ago. So I'm going to pick back up with something I started to read, which is a section that they didn't care for, called Ignoring the Dam. And they're doing a trailer for something that AMC presents, which is kind of a different kind of vampire story. It looks like Evil Christmas. Oh, I think that's just a different version of something we've already seen. I think it's Nosferatu. Yeah, it is. It's a Nosferatu thing. And I think we may be back in a moment, so I'm going to wait to read this. Yep. I'll see you guys at break number two. Okay, guys, it is 9:18. We are back for break number two. Joan is up to 6'5 and passing me, and I'm at 6'25. And let's see, some commentary from in between the last time to now. Joan is like, maybe with Morgan's stick earlier, we were like, why is this such a big deal? It's the stick that got him from Virginia to where he is now, and someone somehow got attached to it. And then they're in Humbug's Gulch. And by the way, apparently a lot of the promo stuff was incorrect. It's calling it Humbug Gulch. Several places did. So the guy I was picking on earlier for saying Humbug's Gulch was the only one who got it right. So I got to go find out who that was because, dude, I owe you a huge apology because you were the one who had it right and all the rest of us are idiots. So sorry about that and good going for you. I was kind of wondering how a nurse knows lockpicking, or is that just, you know, how does Carol know how to shoot so well and make cookies and whatever else? Jonah says, how bad could it be? Oh, Luciana, never say something like that in an apocalypse. Yeah, that's a surefire way to have the plot demonstrate the answer. And then Joan's theory about how does the nurse know lockpicking, when the nurse is June Moore or whatever other name she's had, I'm not surprised she has some interesting skills. Fair enough. And so it's 9:19. We probably got a couple minutes, so I'm going to scoot over to the article from TV Insider, what they got right and wrong. So what they thought is wrong that I picked back up from last time is ignoring the dam at the end of season three. Season three ended with an exciting cliffhanger after the dam collapsed. Madison was the only known survivor, and she was left isolated from her family and friends with their fates uncertain. Fans assumed the next season would incorporate her search for Nick, Alicia, and Strand, with hopes she would show at least feature flashbacks that explain how the tightly knit group managed to stitch itself back together. Thank you. That always annoyed me, and so we got so ahead of all of that that I didn't get to get back to that point. But I always thought there was a major flaw between seasons 3 and 4 of how did everyone magically find one another again? And if that magic could happen, how the hell did they think, you know, Troy was going to come back from the hammerhead bashing dead and follow them all the way to Texas, and yet people like Kalataka couldn't. I don't know. It was stupid. So instead, the article says, Fear opted to tell, not show, how Madison managed to locate the people she loved in an extremely awkward chunk of expositional dialogue, which was jarringly out of character. Strand summarized how it was done. Apparently, Madison somehow found Alicia and Nick. Nick went out and found Luciana. And Madison nursed Strand back to health in a cave. What? There are several logistical inconsistencies with that explanation, but perhaps the biggest insult is that none of it was shown on screen. Fans had clamored to see how everyone reunited after such a literally explosive finale, and instead they were given a few sentences that did little to meet expectations or alleviate confusion. So we're back. I'll shut up. I'll see you guys at the next break. Okay, guys, 9:28, and we are at commercial break number 3. I'm going up to 6:05, and I'm meeting Joan, who's staying at her 6:05. So we've had the tire blowout. There was that part coming that we were waiting on. And Joan has said, yeah, now everyone's on foot. John and June got their tires blown out. Thank you, Dwight. Now Alicia and Luciana. And not sure I'd get behind the wheel if I was Morgan. And then she was fussing. Good idea, Alicia. Leave the nails in the middle of the road for Morgan to find, too. Love John and June, but Alicia is being a moron. And Joan is frustrated because she's been smarter than that. You know, most recently, that has not been a thing with her. Okay, so I think I've caught up with our commentary and our ratings. So I'm going to run back over to TV Insider to the Right and Wrong article. And speaking of which, they got right John Dory. So what's your story? John Dory has only been in a few episodes so far, 11 months ago when this was written. But he's already a well-rounded, interesting character. His gunslinging abilities come in handy, and his genuine kindness and generosity make him a rarity in a world that turns good people selfish and cruel. It only took a few minutes in the opening episode of the season for fans to start falling in love with him, and his bottle episode really solidified that. Talking is hard. The man still signs his movies out on a rental sheet at the department store and returns them when he's done. He freely offers strangers Werther's Originals and baked beans. He's basically the sharpshooter white knight of the zombie apocalypse. As if he needed another trait to make him incredibly endearing, John is in love with a woman whose life he saved and who eventually saved him in return. He manages to find her again in the middle of the season, and if the final 8 episodes feature a few more chapters of their love story, it might be well worth turning in to see it. Well, you know, here it is 11 months later, and boy, little did you know just exactly how true and not true that was going to be. So we have a little bit of time. I'm going to keep going. What they don't like, inconsistent characterization. Several major characters acted and spoke differently in Fear's 4th season than they did in the 3rd, with little or no explanation as to how they underwent such a fundamental change in personality. Nick, for example, used to greatly enjoy walking among the dead. In season 3's El Matadero, he slipped outside the walls of the bazaar and covered himself in walker guts just for fun. In season 4, he's suddenly afraid of the walkers and dislikes leaving the baseball stadium. And my commentary from the article is, I'm not sure that was the problem, as we later found out, but just it did kind of come off that way. So there was no logic to it at the time it happened in the plot. It didn't make sense, and it bugged people. I think that was a valid diss. Also, article says, Alicia is also different than she was in seasons past. Her decision to keep Charlie, the girl who killed her brother, alive is probably the most glaring example. I agree. I like the character of Charlie, but I don't think she deserved to be saved at the point in time that she was. I'm going to pause here because we're getting another trailer for Nosferatu, which means we're going to be back in a minute, and then I'll see you guys at break number 4. And we are back, so I'll shut up. See you guys in a little bit. Okay, guys, it's 9:38, so we are at break number 4. Joan is at 6:75. I'm actually willing to ease up a little and go to 7. We both kind of liked the last scene with the player piano escape. That was kind of fun. Joan's like, everything old is new again after all. And she said, why did John Dory seem surprised when Dwight said Walker? Surely Morgan has used that term. I don't know that I recall Morgan has, which reminds me, I promised you guys last season I was going to do that list with all of the names from all the places it came from. Joan's been picking at it, too. What I may end up doing, Joan, is I may send you a copy of the progress that I've made if you want to compare notes or whatever. I've made quite a bit of progress in the sorting. But I don't recall Morgan making a specific reference to Walkers in the dialogue. Maybe he has, and I'm just a nerd to it because I'm so used to it. But Joan is at 6:75. I am at 7. Joan says, since Morgan was the first to say Walker way back in the first episode of the original series, thought he would have said it at least once in John's presence. That sounds logical to me. I just don't recall it having happened. Or, here you go. Here's a plot device. That's a perfect reason for John Dory to say something like, only other guy I ever heard that said Walkers would have been Morgan. And there you go. That's how it all ties in, which could possibly be how they're going to make this happen. Okay, so we got a – do we have a couple minutes? We might have a couple minutes. So let me go back over to the article. And there's not much left, so let me see if I can finish this out for you. So we're talking about Alicia not doing something bad to Charlie. And like I had mentioned, I like Charlie, but I agree that it was kind of dumb. He killed Nick. She killed Nick, excuse me. And she just kind of, oh, I have to be good to you now. I don't know what the hell that was. The Alicia of season 3, who had to mercy kill dozens of people to survive, would not have allowed someone who shot Nick in cold blood remain at her side. Yet she appears none too bothered by Charlie's presence in the group as they sit around a campfire and eat noodles at the end of the mid-season finale. And there are other abnormalities smaller than these. Madison's mantra, no one's gone till they're gone, doesn't quite click with the ruthless, cunning woman she was evolving into in the show's 3rd season. And Luciana barely speaks at all and didn't seem too worried about burying Nick after his death. A year changes people, but it is difficult to accept these personality shifts when they're not being shown on screen or explained. And I completely agree. I think these are valid criticisms. And I wanted to make sure that we got a chance to talk about them. I don't know if you have anything you want to poke at with those, Joan. Feel free if you do. And I'm just going to go ahead and move this down to my pile of links. I try to keep them on hand so I don't repeat them when possible. Okay, so the last one is the thing about Dwight. And I will probably make sure I do read that tonight since it's relevant to tonight's episode. We're not quite back, so I'll at least give you the lead-in. Here's a storyline likely connecting The Walking Dead to Fear through Dwight by Dustin Rowles, R-O-W-L-E-S, written on the 17th of April at uprocks.com. And we have a trailer for something, a movie called Anna, in theaters on June 21st. And now we're back. I'll shut up. I'll see you guys at break number 6. Okay, guys, it's 9:51, and we are back at break number six. Joan and I are going to 7-2-5 because we like the San Antonio split. So you guys got to at least make sure that you catch that. Let's see. Let me go back to the comments. We were talking before about the personality changes from that last article. And Joan had said, the only thing I think with Alicia about Faith is that she committed the mercy killings before she lost Madison and saved Charlie after. But not sure why she would have had such a change so quickly. And I had said, it's more than I'm pretty happy with. Oh, I'm talking about the notes for the names for walkers. And I said, I could buy it if they showed their work. Like the article was saying, they don't show their work. And then I said, there's some other talk about the doc with the names in it. Joan says, looks like Morgan avoided the nails in the road. Anybody's guess how? Maybe he saw the car and slowed down. And I have no idea. So we are at 725. Let me see. Okay, so there is the Dwight article, and it's 9:52. Let me see what I can get through, because that does pertain to tonight's episode. Okay, Austin Emilio played Dwight on The Walking Dead until the 8th season finale. Will be joining Fear the Walking Dead in its 5th season. There's been a lot of speculation surrounding how Dwight finds himself in the same vicinity as Morgan and company, in Texas and the surrounding area. That speculation was further fueled by a quote Scott Gimple, the architect of The Walking Dead universe, dropped at WonderCon recently, citing a very interesting commonality, the story strand that's going to be furthered on this show that started on The Walking Dead. Where it concerns Austin Emilio's character, it actually seems fairly self-evident once we understand that Dwight's entrance into Fear has been in the works as long as Morgan's crossover, which I told you guys last week. The two were asked to join Fear around the same time. It's just that only Lenny James's transfer was announced publicly because he's been on the show all last season, but Dwight wasn't. From the Metro, quote, it's a crossover Lenny knew about when he moved over initially, with Austin having to keep the secret on lockdown for over a year. Quote, it's a very weird situation, but not in the way most people might expect, Lenny said, because I knew Austin was coming over from almost the moment I knew I was. So I've known for a while. In other words, the storyline has been in the works since season 8 of The Walking Dead, meaning that whatever continuation exists between the two series will date back to before the time jump on The Walking Dead, to even before Rick Grimes disappeared. The helicopter situation is not out of the question, of course, because the helicopters did date back to prior to the time jump. I think it's more simple than that, however. Quote, the reason that Dwight is on this show is that, knowing Dwight's character so well and where he was at the end of Walking Dead Season 8, it sets so beautifully with what we're doing, Scott Gimple said at WonderCon. The last we saw of Dwight on The Walking Dead, he was reading a note his wife Sherry left for him with only one word on it, quote, honeymoon. The natural continuation of that, of course, is that Dwight is still in search of Sherry, as he's mentioned. Perhaps he and Sherry honeymooned in the Texas area or dreamed out doing so. Dwight, who is not actually that far behind Morgan, thus makes his way to Texas, only it takes him a few months longer than Morgan. And I'm about to stop because we're having a trailer for something called Stuber in theaters July 12th, which means we'll probably be back in a minute. Ooh, I don't know what this strangeness is. Oh, it's the end of Stuber. Okay. So I'm expecting us to go back in a hot second. So I'm stalling. Yes, and, well, can't stop watching Fear the Walking Dead. Get each new episode 40 hours early, amcpremiere.com. And a trailer for Nosferatu. Let me see. I don't know if there's anything real quick I could say. Let's see. Oh, I think it's more than just finding Sherry. I think that's the end goal. But before Dwight can reunite with his ex-wife, he has to earn his redemption first. Recall the letter Sherry left Dwight back in episode 11 of season 8. You've become everything you didn't want to be, she wrote. I loved who you were. I'm sorry I made you into what you are. All right, and here I will pause because I think we're going back. Yep, see you guys at break number 7 or probably the end. Okay, guys, it's 10:05. I'm actually going to go ahead and end on an 8. Jones at 7.75. We're trying to figure out last couple of things. I don't know why John Dory was lying to Dwight about the registration and what was written on there. And, you know, it wasn't the same car. And maybe he's trying to give Dwight hope or something, but it was all kind of weird and ham-fisted, and I don't understand what it was supposed to do. As far as the kids and everything, and Max being in the van, I was pretty sure he was lying, and it was all a trap. And then we find out, yeah, it totally is. And Joe's like, it was worse than I thought, and it was what I thought. And I was trying to figure out what was tying those walkers up, if they were entrails or blood-soaked rope, because rope is stronger, but it looks like entrails, so I can't figure it out. I think the kids are in on this, and I think they're tied to Logan, because they made such a big deal about Logan, and you got a big heavy hitter like Matt Frewer, and hopefully they don't throw that away the way that they threw away. Oh, crap. I feel like an idiot for saying this. Emma Caulfield, yeah, who was, you know, part of the whole season 3 thing and then just went completely missing. And never going to let that stuff go. Tracy Otto. That was a big name to bring in and then just throw out. So hopefully you're not going to do that with Matt. So I'm pretty sure Logan is behind the kids doing all this crazy crap. Joan thinks it's entrails. And is it, the kids are fairly far from Logan. How far does his influence reach? How far away do we think that they are? Because I'm not sure they're that far. But, I mean, Logan did have a trucking business, so God knows. I really don't know. I'm just speculating, and that's part of why we don't do spoilers, because I could be talking out of my ass. But if I already knew, it would kind of ruin this whole conversation and having the fun of figuring it out. Let me see. So let me finish the Dwight article. We have a couple of minutes, and I'm about halfway through. So let's see. So we're talking about before Dwight can really reunite with Sherry, he has to earn his redemption. And recall the letter that she wrote. So when Dwight enters Sphere, he's still not the man he used to be, the man that Sherry fell in love with. Quote, I can say it definitely doesn't get any easier for him. It's probably the darkest spot he's ever been in. It is heavy. Dwight has definitely been in some tough spots on The Walking Dead. It gets tougher for him, Austin Emilio said at WonderCon. That's all I can say now. It just gets drawn out. The darkness is just drawn out. But I'm excited to show where he is. It's fun to play that, and he has such a strong purpose. Now, it does make sense to have him be in this sort of a spot, end quote. And what better way to earn the redemption he so desperately seeks than by joining forces with Morgan and his crew, which will begin season 5 on a goodwill mission to find those in need. That's exactly what Dwight needs to transform himself into the person he used to be and to earn back the right to be with his wife. Will Dwight ever reunite with Sherry? Da-da-da. That remains to be seen, but if he can fully earn his redemption, maybe Dwight doesn't reunite with Sherry in this life, but in the next. In other words, he may die, but at least he'll die worthy of the man he used to be. Okay. La, 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 la. Thank you for joining us, Joan. Logan has sent the group as far as he could so he could take back his stuff, like a couple of states, I thought. I didn't think that when they crashed with the airplane that they were that many states away. I don't think that they were out of that region, just, you know, several counties, because it was a little bitty plane. And, you know, gas is hard to come by. So they wouldn't just fly somewhere, assuming they didn't crash, and not have gas to get home with a plane full of several people. I don't know. You know, I assume this will all make sense as the season goes on. But as I said, you know, thank you guys for joining us. So let me go ahead and do the review of the rest of season 5. So next week is Skidmark. That's June 23rd. End of Everything is episode 5, June 30th. That's being directed by Sarah Wayne Callies, who played Lori. Episode 6 is The Little Prince on July 7th, Still Standing. Number 7, July 14th. And mid-season finale is Anybody Out There, the radio show thing. Michael Satrazemis is director, and that's July 21st. Please join us next Sunday for episode 4, Skidmark. And other upcoming shows on NDB Media, aside from ours, tomorrow night, Monday Night in America, 6:17 at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Roger Noriega brings you the latest in the world, of course, the world according to Roger. So hopefully you guys can join us for some of that. Thank you for joining us, Joan. We appreciate that. One little quick comment she's put in. They seem to be far enough that Strand thinks he needs another plane to get them because the mountains are something hard to drive over. Yes, but again, that could still be just a few counties rather than several states away, and definitely close enough where Logan could be involved. It's, you know, it's a theory, and they're a little vague about locations, and I'm assuming this will neaten itself up as the season goes on. So, at any rate, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up so you guys can go. There won't be Talking Dead, as I've mentioned. And we will see you guys next weekend, same bat time, same bat channel, and all of that kind of fun stuff. And very much appreciate you all joining us each and every week. Oh, Joe says, where there's skid mark, there's Salazar and Strand. Yes, hopefully so. Hopefully that will be next week. All right, thank you for joining us, and see you next time.